When the demon Maya was saved from the fire by his friend Arjuna, Maya presented him with an assembly hall in which Duryodhana would later mistake water for a solid floor. So who knows what chapter that is in of the 10th canto, which was the cause, came out to be the cause of the Kurukshetra war in chapter 75 after the Rajasuya sacrifice was performed and after Sisupal was killed by Krishna and after Jarasandha was killed. And then this event took place, and all the, there was in this assembly hall there was like balconies, and the ladies, the queens, were on the balconies. And when Duryodhana stepped in the water, he was, because it was in the Brahmasthan, in this very center, which was according to Vastu, it has to, there's no, you never place water in the center. So he never expected water to be there, and by the tricks of Maya Dhanava, there was water there. So he stepped in it, and all the queens, especially Draupadi, they went, they laughed at him. And Bhima became upset and told them, stop that. And Krishna said, he encouraged them, huh? Or Yudhisthira said, stop them. Because Krishna has his plans, and if we have a little time at the end, we'll read from the Mahabharata, the amazing pastime of the burning of the Kandava forest. It's quite astounding, actually, what happened. And one just can't, if one looks at it from a whatever happens, dealing with Krishna from just a worldly perspective, it's very hard to understand if we try to judge with our judging mentality, with our finite intelligence, the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They prove to be ununderstandable. Why would he do such a thing? But he has his plan and his ways. So here is one of the things, one of the results. Arjuna got his weapon and the assembly, as Krishna was, he was arming Arjuna for the battle, and simultaneously he was causing the battle. He was helping cause the battle, because this was really the beginning when Duryodhana fell into the water, and he was so insulted, especially by Draupadi, who he had wanted as his wife when Arjuna had won her in her Swayamvara. So it was piercing to his heart, and therefore he always plotted even more strongly. The enmity in his heart was deepened by that, and that ended up being a cause in the battle of Kurukshetra. But of course the ultimate cause, as we're seeing, is Krishna. 28. Then Lord Krishna, given leave by Arjuna and other well-wishing relatives and friends, returned to Dwarka with Satyaki and the rest of his entourage. So how many... The supremely auspicious Lord then married Kalinda. He had sent her before. On a day when the season, the lunar asterism... What's lunar asterism? Huh? Nakshatra. And the configuration of the sun and other heavenly bodies were all propitious, they were all positive and auspicious, parama mangalam. In this way, he brought the greatest pleasure to his devotees. And as we heard from the Gopal Champu, that the sun god, her father, was the great astrologer, and he arranged the time, actually. That was the point of that. So that was wife number four. Now here's wife number five. Vindhya. So what quality did you pick up about wife number four, Kalindi? She was so determined and focused on Krishna.
She was fearless.
Yes.
Austere.
Yes. One pointed. That was. There's different points in the. Well, here the wives have different personalities, and they're really individuals. But there's common elements in their achievement as well. Vindhya and Anuvindhya, who shared the throne of Avanti. What's another name for the city of Avanti? Current? Ujjain. So what's Ujjain most famous for, other than the wonderful temple that His Holiness Bhakti Chumaraj has constructed so rapidly? But what is it famous for? The Gurukul of Sandipani Muni and his most famous two students of Krishna and Balaram, and the most famous other student, Sudama. When the time came for their sister, Mitravinda, now Mitravinda has an interesting personality, to select her husband in the Swayamvara ceremony, they forbade her to choose Krishna, although she was attracted to him. Purport, the feelings of enmity between the Kurus and the Pandavas were so strong that Mitravinda's brothers, out of friendship for Dujadon, forbade the young maiden to accept Krishna as her husband. My dear king, Lord Krishna forcibly took away Princess Mitravinda, the daughter of his aunt Rajadi Devi, before the eyes of the rival kings. So there's number five. So she was attracted to Krishna. Her brothers didn't want her to marry Krishna, and Krishna decided she's going to be my wife. And despite the opposition, he forcibly took her away. Now let's read something from the Gopal Champu on this marriage. Krishna stole Mitravinda, the daughter of Rajadi Devi, the sister of Vasudev. Mitravinda accepted Krishna previously as her husband when her brothers Vinda and Anuvinda opposed and enemy kings wanted to marry her. Thus the bards, the poets sing, he defeated the two brothers who opposed his marriage to Mitravinda and similarly defeated the enemy kings, since he had similar powers of vira, courage. The sage Bharata defines perseverance, utsaha, as the manifestation of strength in offering oneself to a lover, or manifestation of strength to defeat the enemy. Nanda, who was hearing this from the messengers, said with embarrassment, the custom of the Yadus is not to marry a close relative. So who is she again? She was the daughter of Rajadi Devi, who is the sister of Vasudev, and Krishna was the son of Vasudev. So this, it depends where actually, according in the different areas of India, there's different laws regulating who you can marry and who you can't marry. So that makes them cousins. First cousins, in cousin brothers, so, but they weren't cousin brothers. But one would think that it was an inappropriate marriage. But we also heard that Krishna stole Mitravinda. Please listen to these words very carefully. Since Mitravinda accepted Krishna previously as her husband. So she had accepted Krishna as a husband, and despite the opposition and despite the closeness in their familial relationship, Krishna took her anyway. So Nanda Maharaj asked about this. The custom of the Yadus is not to marry a close relative, but Krishna did so because he considered his gotra to be different. And what was the gotra that he considered himself? A cowherd boy. It was not right, the messenger said, for her to marry anyone else, anyone other than Krishna. Though her friends advised her that it was not proper to have an attraction for Krishna, on seeing him, she became strongly attached to him as her only goal. The women gave instructions in joy. He is your uncle's son, and he is like a cloud. Her moon face that then turned, because they told her, he's your uncle's son. He's your cousin. Oh, see, instead of saying he's your cousin, they described his relationship in relationship to her father's brother, her mother's brother. The women gave instructions to her, to Mitravinda, to not marry Krishna. He's your uncle's son, and he's dark like a cloud. When Mitravinda heard this, her moon face turned red in anger, anger like the sun. And everyone asked. So she didn't accept it. She was a Kshatriya girl. She became angry. And then the next question was, since she was in the inner chambers of the palace in Avanti, how did she manage to see Krishna? Because Gopal Champo just stated, when she saw Krishna, she immediately fell in love with him. She felt attraction for him. On seeing him, she became strongly attached to him and made him her only goal. So how is it possible that she saw Krishna? She was in the inside of the palace. And the answer, Uddhava has fully described this to us. Previously, Krishna and Balaram had gone secretly to Avantipur to study. Why was it secret? Because they did not tell Nanda Maharaj, since they feared that you would worry about them, Nanda Maharaj and the other residents of Vrindavan. They went secretly. By dedicated service to Guru, in 64 days, they learned the 14 types of knowledge and the 64 arts. They made their Guru happy by bringing back their dead son, killing the Panchajanya demon, and subduing Yamaraj. In doing such difficult actions for others, they moved the hearts of compassionate people. Understanding who they were, Rajadi Devi, even though there was some secrecy involved, the sister Vasudeva, brought them to her house and welcomed them as guests. She welcomed them with great affection. So therefore, Mitravinda got to see Krishna at that time. So that's a little more on that. So what was her quality? She was very determined, and she didn't care. And in some way, people told her that there were wrong things involved in it, just became angry at them. She had a fiery nature, it appears. That's the power of attraction to Krishna. Tatralokam apimuyam ekamam. Now we're going to hear about the next queen that was married. O king, this is speaking to Maharaj Prickett, Sukadeva Goswami speaking. O king, Nagnajit, the very pious king of Kaushalya, means Ayodhya, had a lovely daughter whose name was Nagnajiti or Satya. The kings who came as suitors were not allowed to marry her unless they could subdue 7 sharp horned bulls. These bulls were extremely vicious and uncontrollable, and they could not tolerate even the smell of warriors. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master of the Vaishnavas, heard of the princess who was to be won by the conqueror of the bulls, he went to the capital of Kaushalya with a large army. The king of Kaushalya, pleased to see Krishna, worshipped him, by rising from his throne and offering him a seat of honor and substantial gifts. Lord Krishna also greeted the king respectfully. When the king's daughter saw that most agreeable suitor arrive, she immediately desired to have him. The Lord of Goddess Rama. She prayed. She began to pray. May he become my husband. If I have kept my vows, may the sacred fire bring about the fulfillment of my hopes. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments in this regard as follows. Princess Sakya prayed, how can I please that person who appears in various transcendental forms within this world whenever there is necessity of upholding the principles of religion? He is now present before me in his original spiritual form. So what is the essence of that prayer? It's more of a question, isn't it? As we were speaking of before, what is the question that she was asking? How can I please him? How can I serve him? And this is the essence of a Vaishnava's mood. It is not me-centered, but it is Krishna-centered. How can I please him? So she knew that he was the Supreme Lord, that he was the origin of all the incarnations, and yet he was present before this Vaiham Manusham Rupam Tava Somyam Cha Arjuna, your beautiful two-armed human-like form. How may the Supreme Personality of Godhead become pleased with me? King Nagnajit first worshipped the Lord properly and then addressed him. O Narayana, Lord of the universe, you are full in your own spiritual pleasure. Therefore, what can this insignificant person do for you? They were the king. He was the king of where? Ayodhya, Kaushalya. Raise your hand if you've been to Ayodhya. One, two. No. Sukadeva Goswami said, O beloved descendant of Kuru, the Supreme Lord was pleased, and after accepting a comfortable seat, he smiled and addressed the king in a voice as deep as the rumbling of a cloud. The Supreme Lord said, O ruler of men, learned authorities condemn begging for a person in the royal order who is executing his religious duties. Even so, desiring your friendship, I ask you for your daughter, though we offer no gifts in exchange. So this is Kshatriya mood. They don't beg, they take. So Krishna does that sometimes. He wants this wife, so he just takes her. And that's what we heard in the last. Who was the last wife we just heard about? Mithyavinda. So he just took her, despite the opposition of the family members, because they were, they weren't very devoted, were they? They were inimical to Krishna. That's the definition of a demon. But Krishna doesn't just kidnap Mithyavinda, because look at the mood of King Nagnajiti Asatya. Because his mood, he's so devoted, what can we do for you? So he says, I'm not going to ask you, beg. A kshatriya is not allowed to ask, but yet, for you, I'm breaking kshatriya dharma because you are so devoted and you understand who I am. I'm breaking kshatriya dharma and I'm asking for your daughter. And we're not going to give you anything. So in other words, that this is actually the proper way, that the father gives the daughter in charity, so there's nothing in return. But the king said, This is text 41. My Lord, who could be a better husband for my daughter than you, the exclusive abode of all transcendental qualities? On your body, the goddess of fortune herself resides, never leaving you for any reason. But to ascertain the proper husband for my daughter, O chief of the Satvatas, we previously set a condition to test the prowess of her suitors. Vishnav Chakravarti Thakur comments. Here the king replies to Krishna's statements. We have no payment, to Krishna's statement that we have no payment to give for the bride. The king said, but I have made a rule to test the strength of any groom desiring my daughter as his bride. Otherwise all the kings would ask for her, and how could I agree to all of them? The actual purpose in setting up this test, however, is to attain you as my son-in-law. For only you can subdue these wild bulls. Beside, without any doubt, you, whose outstanding beauty and character my daughter has already heard about, are the only desirable candidate for marrying her. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is pointing out that actually the king has set this standard of conquering the bulls. For which purpose? So that only Krishna could marry her, because no one else can conquer the bulls. So this is said in the purport here in text 42. These seven wild bulls are impossible to tame, O hero. They have defeated many princes, breaking their limbs. If you can subdue them, O descendant of Yadu, you will certainly be the appropriate bridegroom for my daughter, O Lord of Shri. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments on text 44. In this sentence, yad means if. So where is the yad? If you can subdue them. Krishna, if. If Krishna has the power to subdue them? If. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur picks up this point and says, in this sentence, yad means if, but the true meaning is because, yasmat, because you controlled the seven bulls, you can marry my daughter. By addressing Krishna as the husband of Lakshmi, Sriapati, the king indicates this subduing of the bulls is not at all impossible for you. Thus you are already ascertained as the suitable groom. These bulls are enemies of yours and have been put here for their being killed. Then, upon hearing these terms, the Lord tightened his clothing. He expanded himself, tightened his clothing, getting ready for a fight. Krishna already, he did this when? Also, when did he do this? Who did he fight with? Also before Kaliya, tightened his belt, he tied his hair back, killing Kuvalaya Pita, and also? Kaliya, we said that one. Kaliya, Kuvalaya Pita. In the wrestling arena, perhaps. There was one other place I was thinking of where he did it. It'll come to me in a moment. Keshi. I think he did something, I think. Maybe someone can check to see if he also tightened his cloth, getting ready for a fight. Huh? I'm not sure, but you can check that after. But I was thinking Keshi. So the Lord tightened his clothing, expanded himself into seven forms, and easily subdued the bulls. Purport. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, Lord Krishna expanded himself into seven forms, not only to playfully defeat the seven bulls, but also to show Prince Satya that she would not have to compete with his other queens, since he could enjoy with all of them simultaneously. Lord Saudi tied up the bulls, whose pride and strength were now broken, and pulled them with ropes just as a child playfully pulls wooden toy bulls. Then King Nagarjit, pleased and astonished, presented his daughter to Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead accepted this suitable bride in the proper Vedic fashion. Purport. The word sadrishim indicates that the lovely princess was a fitting bride for the Lord because she possessed wonderful transcendental qualities that complemented his. As Srila Jiva Goswami points out, the word vishmitaha indicates that King Nagarjit was certainly astonished at the many extraordinary events suddenly taking place in his life. 48. The king's wives felt the greatest ecstasy upon attaining Lord Krishna as the dear husband of the royal princess, and a mood of great festivity arose. Conch shells, horns, and drums resounded, along with vocal and instrumental music and the sounds of brahmanas invoking blessings. The joyful men and women adorned themselves with fine clothing and garlands. As the dowry, powerful King Nagarjit gave 10,000 cows, 10,000 cows, 3,000 young maidservants wearing golden ornaments on their necks and bedecked in fine clothing, 9,000 elephants, 100 times as many chariots as elephants, 100 times as many horses as chariots, and 100 times as many manservants as horses. That was the dowry. The king of Kosal, his heart melting with affection, had the bride and groom seated on their chariot, and then he sent them on their way, surrounded by a great army. And when the intolerant kings who had been rival suitors heard what had happened, they tried to stop Lord Krishna on the road as he took his bride home. But just as the bulls had been broken, the king's strength before the Yadu warriors broke, but as the bulls had been broken, as the bulls had broken the king's strength before, the Yadu warriors broke it now. Oh yes, because the kings had tried to tame the bulls before, and the bulls had broken their pride and their strength, so the Yadu warriors again broke it now. Arjun, wielder of the Gandiva bow, was always eager to please his friend Krishna, and thus he drove back those opponents who were shooting torrents of arrows at the Lord. He did this just as a lion drives away insignificant animals. Lord Devakisuta, the chief of the Yadus, then took his dowry and Satya to Dwarka and continued to live there happily. Now let's hear how Jiva Goswami describes this incident. There was a daughter of the king whose name was Nagarjit of Kosal. She was bound by a strong rope of attachment. The daughter named Satya gave up everything because of her desire for Krishna. The lightning of her glance appeared on the new cloud of his complexion. A rain of tears appeared when his voice vibrated like thunder. And not attaining his nature, she moistened everything with her tears. When her father saw that she was attracted to Krishna, how do you think he felt? Contrasting it with the other, with the previous ones, Mitravinda's parents. He was a devotee. He was a great devotee. He was the king of Ayodhya, of Kosalya. He was a devotee. So, when she saw how attracted Mitravinda was, and that was such a nice description of her attraction, joy overtook, yes, his heart. But he had an enemy in the form of his brother's son named Brihadbala. At the insistence of friends combined with strong armies, the king could not do as he wanted. After much thinking, he concluded as follows. An action must be found for which no kshatriya has the power, and by which skill from practice cannot succeed, but by which Govinda, who is endowed with all powers and who is enthroned by the devatas headed by Indra and Sarabi, he alone can perform. The opportunity should be found in simultaneously tying up seven bulls raised with joy, which cannot be moved by anyone, which have the nature of great demons, which cannot tolerate the smell of heroes, which are filled with anger, and which possess unconquerable power. After thinking in this way, with the permission of Brihadbala, he saw that the group of warriors, powerful kings of the world, who had been summoned by Brihadbala and had close association with him, they all had their limbs broken by the bulls. Consulting the wise, he called Krishna with great affection. The messenger said, "Oh, with a huge army's support, now it's clear why Krishna brought the huge army with him, because the Brihadbala, the son of the son of Nagnajit, had summoned other suitors who had their armies. With a huge army for support, Krishna came with an excited heart." Why did Krishna come with an excited heart? Huh? He was getting a wonderful wife who was so attached to him, and he wanted to kill all these demons also, because he had come for this purpose, to rid the world of the demonic forces who are overburdening the earth. Knowing the affection and the intentions of the king, he came with Arjuna and Balaram. Knowing the affection and the intentions of the king, he sent a message through one of the leaders in secret in order to subdue or be in secret in order to subdue or be subdued by the seven bulls, which could not be controlled by the whole world. This is what he said. O king, what you have decided is something of Indra's capacity. Your desire to give your daughter to the person who can bind the bulls out of a desire for finding the strongest person is only a pretext. It's a show. This is not arrangement for Kshatriya Dharma to give in exchange for a tax. I ask for your daughter out of affection, as one asks for a boon from a devata. So respectful and sweet. I do not desire to pay the tax. Just give him to me. Ashamed by putting a prerequisite on Krishna, you can only have your daughter, my daughter, if you subdue the bulls. Ashamed, the king sent a reply through the messenger. Your words are correct. I did not arrange this exchange for my daughter, but I have decided that taming the seven bulls in exchange for my daughter is the way that you can marry her. Krishna smiled and did just as the king desired. Krishna tied up the demoniac bulls who had sharp horns, who were fixed on killing everyone, that could not be touched, that galloped about in the strong enclosure, that were roaring fiercely with strong breathing. And seeing those bulls, the universe shouted in dismay and became blind. To bind the bulls, Krishna's body became like rope. And the rope was incidental. For stunning the bulls and all enemies, he shone like the midday sun amongst them. So although he acted like rope to bind them, that was just completely incidental, not even secondary or tertiary. His potency, his power, his effulgence was shining. And then what happened? When he subdued the bulls, the queens and all the men and women gave the bride to him in joy. There was no effort. while music played loudly. After the marriage, he gave Krishna all the servants and troops that he had sent to accompany them home. When the kings who were crushed by the bulls attacked Krishna on the road, Arjuna fended them off with his arrows, but he did not kill them because he did not want to create any inauspiciousness at the time of Krishna's marriage. Number 7 is coming up, or the 4th in this chapter. And anyone know her name?
Madra.
Madra. We should know these five queens, the first 8 queens, and the order, and it would be nice to know how Krishna married them. Because otherwise our mind becomes absorbed in so many other things. Bhadra was a princess of the Kaikeyi kingdom and the daughter of Lord Krishna's paternal aunt, whose name was Shrutakirti. The Lord married Bhadra when her brothers, headed by Santardhan, offered her to him. And that's all that's said. That's all that's said in the Bhagavatam. But here's what's said in Gopal Champo, a little more detail. Not very much more. The sister of Vasudev, named Shrutakirti, the famous Shrutakirti, had sons equal to Nagarjit, with fame equal to the full moon. And those sons gave their sister, whose name was Bhadra, who was full of all good qualities, to Krishna, who desired her. The devotion of the brothers for Krishna was born as their sister. Their devotion to the Lord was none different from her. That devotion for the Lord manifested in her form. Her limbs were dark and beautiful. She was wearing yellow cloth, and she played with her friends. She worshipped the Lord using paraphernalia of a king. That well-bred girl held that desire for her Lord in her heart. And because she had that desire, because she was born, her form was the manifestation of the devotion of her brothers. So she was devotion itself. So that well-bred young girl had the desire for Krishna in her heart. Because she had that desire and she was a young girl, she felt shame. And she covered her desire. And she used to fall unconscious to the ground. Because her consciousness was devotion. And when she covered that devotion, she covered her consciousness. And she fell to the ground unconscious. So this is devotion. Sunyayate. Nothing. The world becomes meaningless. Jagat sarvam. Govinda verahena me. So these are the qualities, such determined, fixed devotion, that cause one to awaken one's relationship with Krishna, and Krishna to come and take up the desire. Number 8. Then the Lord married Lakshmana, the daughter of the king of Madra. I assume Madra is Madras now. Yes. This is Chennai. Krishna appeared alone at her Swayamvara ceremony and took her away, just as Garuda once stole the demigod's nectar. So Krishna sometimes takes his armies for protection. Yes, and sometimes he can go alone. So what simple philosophical point do we understand from that?
He's independent.
He's independent, but he's all powerful. He doesn't need his armies. Then the question is, he can protect himself without his armies, but then why does he bring his armies sometimes? Ultimately, because he wants to. In the last case, when Satya was taken, Arjuna did all the work because Arjuna wanted to use his power in Krishna's service. What is the use of power without using it in Krishna's service? So, he appeared alone at the Swayamvara ceremony and took her away, just as Garuda once stole the demigod's nectar. Lord Krishna also acquired, that's Lakshmana, the daughter in the Swayamvara, the daughter of the king of Madras. Krishna also acquired thousands of other wives equal to these when he killed Bhaumasura and freed the beautiful maidens the demon was holding captive. And that's the last verse, the 58th verse in this chapter. And in the next chapter, because Maharaj Prickett wants to hear about that, so he will ask about it, about this last verse. But let us hear first details in this eighth marriage of the Swayamvara ceremonies. You will be amazed. There was a king of Madras named Brihatsena in the spotless dynasty of Sindhunad. He was living in the west. He had a daughter named Lakshmana, endowed with auspicious qualities. Now an auspicious festival has occurred with special features. Though the well-bred daughter did not reveal the prema for Krishna that was dwelling in her heart, her mother understood it because the princess used to talk in her sleep. She would say, "Oh, sun god, I offer respects to you. Receive from my hand this worship, including argya and worthy items studded with precious jewels. I say to you repeatedly, as your daughter, I surrender to you. Have me married to Krishna, like Kalindi was married to Krishna." She would say that in her sleep. In the sky, a youth with the complexion of a new cloud sees me. And when he sees me, he smiles gently. I should know him, and I hide amongst my friends. So the mother says to the king, her husband, "O king, your daughter Lakshmana has gone to sleep. Why did she always speak so incoherently? I am her mother, but I do not understand." Her father, the king of Madras, full of affection, gave a method which was difficult to perform even for Arjun, who was the best amongst archers. The king announced the following promise. In the wide courtyard, there is a water trench, which is very deep. And in that trench, trench means nadi, yes? Nadi? Nali? What nali was, what's nali? A gully? Okay. Huh?
Canal,
same, trench. In the trench, there's a pole. On the top of the pole, which is covered, there's a revolving fish, like Jhopadi Swayamvara. While the base is uncovered, the top is covered, the underneath it seems to be uncovered, but you can't see the sky even. I will give my daughter to the warrior who can look at the reflection in the water just once. Not just staring at it and doing it, but just looking once. You have to look at it. Then draw his bow and pierce the fish with his arrow. Deciding in this way, he distributed the announcements and called the warriors. When the kings understood clearly the method of victory, they announced their individual victories. "I've done this and I've done that and I've done this." And they were respected by the king of Madra. First, they should take the bow, then string the bow, then pulling the string, concentrate on the target, in order to succeed. And then I offer respects to the king of Madra who humbled Anuvinda, the enemy of Krishna. I think Anuvinda was one of the Mitavindas, yeah. Jarasandha came. Shishupal, Dujadon, Bhim, and Karna were only capable of stringing the bow, and lesser kings proved completely useless. Arjuna touched the fish with his arrow. When he did it, he was able to, which no one else in the world could even see. Though he was also victorious, the king gave his daughter to Krishna, who pierced the fish. Arjuna previously had become pure in body. He was defeated by Krishna because he attained his qualities by the grace of Krishna's smile. Krishna piercing the fish arranged by Brihadsen was only an excuse. It was an opportunity to pierce the pride of the enemies. The form was different, but the intention was the same. How he pierced the fish is described. He took up the bow. He strung it. He pulled the arrow back to his ear. With a thunderous shout, "Rah!" and he released the arrow. He pierced the covering and the heart of the fish as well as the hearts of the rascals. The arrow pierced two or three attractive coverings which could not be pierced, and then pierced the heart of the diamond fish, rotating at every moment. By the arrow's friction with the coverings and with the fish, sparks shot out with a shattering sound, creating fear in the host of enemies and spread everywhere. Such a hero. The arrow, cutter of demons, defeated them all. When the auspicious moment of Abhijit, victory at midday, arrived, Krishna's time arrived. And when that time arrived, he pierced the fish. When he cut the fish, flowers fell from the heavens. When flowers fell constantly, the daughter of Brihadsena accepted Krishna as her husband, but she was in love with him. She was so much in love with him. She was dreaming about him and talking, worshipping the sun god to get him. Flowers fell constantly. When he cut the fish, flowers fell from the heavens. When the flowers fell constantly, the daughter of Brihadsena accepted Krishna as a husband, and when she accepted him, fine music sounded on earth and in the heavens. Jarasandha's anger became inflamed, along with others. And Krishna placed Lakshmana, and was he alone or with his armies? He placed Lakshmana, who was glowing pink, like a lotus, in her feet, hands, eyes, and face. He placed her, who was glowing pink, like a lotus, on his chariot, and went to Dwarka, protected by a cage of arrows. They prepared to fight him, but Krishna beat them with a dense shower of arrows, like swans under a heavy rain. Some kings gave up their lives. Just as the sun lights up your town by its light, so your son in Dwarka, the messenger said to Nanda Maharaj, lights up the city by his effulgence. Accompanied by Brihadsena with huge armies, they celebrated the marriage with great festivity. And at this time, when Nanda Maharaj is hearing this, Krishna is right with him, and Krishna is sitting on his lap. According to your order, Krishna married all those women, O Nanda. Fulfilling your desires, he is now sitting upon your lap. And hearing this, Nanda pulled Krishna to his lap. He kept him there with joy. He moistened Krishna's head with his tears. O Yasoda, if Nanda Maharaj is crying, Yasoda Maya fainted. And the poets of Braj sang, giving joy to all. He married three queens, including Rukmini, with playfulness and joy, celebrated by brahmanas and all others. So this is the champu of Gopal Champu, the poetry mixed in. He married Kalindi, who performed austerities to attain him. Lord of Braja, listen. He accepted Mitravinda, destroying the hopes of Vinda and Anuvinda. He kindly accepted Satya. He bound seven mad bulls and produced auspiciousness. Her brothers found Krishna affectionate to his devotees to be most suitable and gave their sister, whose name was Bhadra, to him. What nice songs. O king of the cowherds, hear about the eighth marriage. Understanding his daughter's Lakshmana's desired Krishna as her husband, the king of Madra brought Krishna and devised a small fish as a target, and Krishna pierced the unseen fish. In Braja, Krishna creates bliss. O Nanda, he is present among the devotees. O king of the cowherds, he is that are present in the assembly, look, look. Krishna's here. When the topic was concluded in Nanda's assembly, the speaker spoke in the assembly of Radha and Krishna. Marukanta said, when all these marriages were occurring, the gopis were not completely aware of this through the messengers. They heard bits and pieces from others. This was stated earlier. Now the intentions of Krishna should be considered. Krishna got married to pass his time, since the gopis and the queens were actually one in nature. The gopis heard that Rukmini and others were very affectionate to Krishna during the pilgrimage to Kurukshetra. This shows that they were actually one in form. And there's a quotation from the Bhagavatam, 84th chapter. Pritha, Gandhari, Jhopri, Subhadra, the wives of the other kings and the Lord's cowherd girlfriends were all amazed to hear of the queen's deep love for Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the soul of all beings. And when they heard about their love, their own eyes filled with tears. Chandravali was Rukmini, Radha was Satyabhauma, Vishaka was Kalindi, Lalita was Jambavati, Shama was Lakshmana, Saibhi was Mitravinda, and Bhadravali was Bhadra, and Padma was Satya. They were almost all equivalent in nature. Though they were of the same nature, they were not exactly equal in giving happiness to Krishna, as rubbing oil on the feet soothes the eyes. So when he enjoyed with the queens, the gopis felt some relief because of some identity. In this way, they could pass the time without going mad. Yes, the queens, who are somewhat equivalent of the gopis, had an internal sporty manifestation of relationships with Krishna. One can understand that from two chapters in the Bhagavatam, 1083 and 84. But when Krishna, at a distance, plays his flute, touches a creeper with his hand, or touches the water with his foot, the gopis become stunned and their hairs stand on end out of joy. From the Jugal Gita 35. O king, thus during the daytime, the women of Vrindavan took pleasure in continuously singing about the pastimes of Krishna, and those ladies' minds and hearts absorbed in him were filled with great festivity. The nature of the gopis' love is when their consciousness, even at a distance, was touching the activities of Krishna. At a distance, they would feel, became stunned, and their hair stood on end at joy. So this is a comparison with the queens, who were so glorious. But yet, when the gopis would hear or heard about the queen's love, they would become ecstatic because they love Krishna. Krishna also married 16,000 other queens, which will be described later. And then they end. Now, however, O Radha, may the women of the city far away give up Krishna, whom you embrace, For now in Braj, even those who associate with Krishna cannot compare with you. Those are the words of the messengers, the words of Srila Jiva Goswami. If there are questions, we shall hear them. Yes?
Can I ask you to please read the name? Who is who?
Oh, yes. I'll give it to you after. Well, do you want me to read it specifically?
No.
Okay. That's amazing. And later on you can ask me what's amazing. But that's amazing. Should I put on the sounds or you can hear it without the sounds? Chandravali was Rukmini. Radha was Satyabhama. Vishaka was Kalindi. Lalita was Jambavati. Shama was Lakshmana. Saibya was Mitravinda. Saibya. Bhadravali was Mataji. Bhadravali was Bhadra. Padma was Satya. They were all almost equivalent in nature. Is that all right? Or you would like to hear it again? 17. Huh? 17. Any other questions? Because if there's no other questions, yes.
Which was amazing.
That you don't have it yet on your computer. Isn't it? Yes. Because it. Yes.
Kalindi was dark.
Kalindi was dark. Oh, it's the demigod's nectar. Oh, it's a long story connected with Kaliatri. And I'm not going to tell it. Because I can't remember it very well. I never can remember the story. Garuda's mother, she was something with the two wives of the sun god. Does anyone know it well? You know it? Please.
They had a wager about
the two co-wives.
Yeah, Kadru and Vinata.
Vinata. Kadru was the mother of Garuda.
Of snakes. And Vinata is my mother.
Okay, yes.
So they had a wager and Vinata lost, she became a slave to Kadru. So then when Garuda took birth, he asked how to get free. And Kadru said, okay, if you get us the nectar from the demigods, then I'll set the world free. So when he went, there's a long story how he defeated, how he got there. And then he actually got the nectar and he defeated everybody. And when Indra struck him with a thunderbolt, out of respect to the thunderbolt, he dropped one feather. And out of that feather, we have the peacocks, mongoose, and something else which I don't know what it is. Some kind of other creature. But Indra actually liked him, so he befriended him. And he said, can I ask you for a favor? And he said, okay, since you are approaching me as a friend. And he said, please give it back to us. We need this nectar. And then, and they say as he flew, the drop fell at the
Kalia.
Kadamu. So that he remained alive. Kalia wasn't there. So then Garuda said, yes, but I cannot give it back to you like this. I have to bring it to the Kadru. Children of Kadru, but we will do something. When I bring it, I will tell them that it's a sacred object, so first they have to take bath. And if they go to take bath, then you can snatch it. That's what they did. The snakes went to, the fooled snakes went to go and take bath. When they came back, the nectar was gone. And the nectar pot was standing on the kusha grass, so it became sacred. And the snakes started licking the grass to get at least some remnants of the nectar. That's how their tongues became forked.
Because the kusa grass is rough, and cut their tongues. Yes, thank you. But there's more to the story too about the wager. There's a wager between the two. It had to do with the sun, black horses and white horses.
Chaitanya was on the horses produced churning the milk ocean. So in the they couldn't see him clearly. So they wagered. Kadru said it's.
They had a competition. The two wives, as co-wives do, they have a competition. They were competing with each other. So they made this wager, are the horses white or black?
So Vinata said he is completely white, and Kadru said he has a gray or black strand in his tail. And then she sent some of her snake sons to come to woven with the tail. And some refused, and she cursed them, and they came to them also. And when the sun came up, then they could see that even without the snakes, actually, the tail has some black strands. So, and one of the names of the Kali is Vainateya. So,
what's that?
Kaliya is called Kadrusuta. You can see it in the Kadrusuta.
And also, when Krishna climbed the Kadamba tree, he didn't tell the cowherd boys why he was climbing it. He was climbing it to jump into the water. But if the water was poisonous, it had just killed them, and they were brought back to life just simply by the glance of Krishna. So Krishna wouldn't tell them why he was climbing the Kadamba tree, because they would never let him do it, because the water was poisonous. So instead he said, I just want to climb this tree to see if there's any more of the nectar that Garuda left there, hidden in the top. I'll just be right back, I'll just climb up to see. And then Krishna climbed it, he tightened his belt, put back his hair, he slapped his arms, jumped in the water. Now, I wanted to...
And the water overflooded as if some large object had fallen.
Should I read this? This is the how Arjuna and they got their bows and their arrows from the Mahabharata. And it had to do with the burning of the Kandava forest. One page, two pages, three pages, four, take 15 minutes. So this is more about the story. Should we do it? One, not too long for everyone. Everyone will be able to be attentive. It's harder to pay attention also when reading is there, I think, than... It's a very heavy story, actually. I wanted to read it specifically. I mean, other than the pastime is wonderful, and it's from the Mahabharata, but it's ghastly. It's ghastly, and you'll hear what I mean. You know what ghastly means? What does ghastly mean?
It's repulsive.
It's horrible. It's horrible. That there's so much destruction going to be caused. The point being that everything that Krishna does is perfect. He is param satyam. Everything is perfect. It appears to be one thing, perhaps, and offend our finite earthly concept of morality and the mode of goodness. But actually, it is perfect and most wonderful. Please listen. One day, after summer had arrived, Arjuna suggested to Lord Krishna that they go to the Yamuna River to enjoy themselves, parallel to the Bhagavatam, along with their friends, taking Draupadi, Subhadra, and many other beautiful women.
Krishna and Arjuna went to a place in the forest where pleasure palaces had been constructed and furnished with all kinds of enjoyable objects and abundant sumptuous food. After arriving there, everyone began to sing and dance with great merriment. After some time, Krishna and Arjuna slipped away to spend some time alone together. Going to a secluded part of the forest, they sat down and began conversing in a very pleasing mood, a very intimate friendship. Krishna and Arjuna were tight in their friendship. While Krishna and Arjuna were thus sitting together, and an unknown Brahmana suddenly came before them. He was tall and handsome. His complexion was golden, and his eyes were like lotus petals. The Brahmana looked very splendorous, in spite of being dressed in rags and having matted hair. Krishna and Arjuna immediately got up from their seats to welcome their guests. Could you play the tambora? I like that one. In response to their inquiries, the Brahmana explained, "I reside in this forest, very close nearby. I'm an extremely voracious eater, and I've taken this opportunity to approach you great souls in the hope that you will give me enough food so I can eat to my full satisfaction." Arjuna said, "O Brahmana, if it is within our power, we will certainly satisfy you in all respects. Kindly tell us what sort of food you want." At this, the Brahmana disclosed, "Foremost of heroes, it is not ordinary food that I desire. To tell you the truth, I am Agni, the god of fire, and I wanted to devour the entire Khandava forest." Where is the Khandava forest? Does anyone know? Has anyone seen it? I don't know where it is. "This forest is under the protection of Indra, and I've already tried to consume it with my flames on numerous occasions. However, since Takshaka is Indra's dear friend, the snake, and lives there along with his family, the King of Heaven always foiled my attempts. Now, if you will kindly prevent Indra from pouring rain, and also stop the living entities who reside within the Khandava forest from escaping, I will be able to attain my desired goal." At this point in the narration, Maharaj Janmajaya became very curious to know why Agni was so eager to devour the Khandava forest. In reply to his question, Vaishampayan related the following history. "There was once a king whose name was Svetaki, whose heart was always inclined towards the performance of sacrifices. Indeed, he performed so many continuous sacrifices that the Brahmana priest finally left, having become practically blind from the smoke and thoroughly exhausted. When he tried to solicit the help of the Brahmanas to perform even more sacrifices, they suggested that he take help from Lord Shiva. After going to Kailash, King Svetaki worshipped Lord Shiva with unwavering attention and great determination." Because, my dear devotees, we cannot accomplish anything without great determination and unwavering attention. "He performed his austerities, his worship, standing the whole time with his arms upraised. Finally, after 6 months, Lord Shiva became pleased and appeared before the king, whose name was Svetaki. However, when Svetaki requested him to assist in his sacrificial performance, Lord Shiva refused, saying that he never engaged in such work. Still, Lord Shiva sent Durvasa Muni, a partial incarnation of himself, and in this way, a great 100-year sacrifice was completed. But because Agni had to drink ghee continuously as Maharaj Svetaki offered oblations, he became ill with a loss of appetite, forcing him to abandon the accepting of offerings from further sacrifices. Indeed, Agni became very pale, and his radiance became greatly diminished. Finally, Agni approached Lord Brahma. "O Lord, because of Swataki's sacrifices, I have eaten too much ghee and have become seriously ill. My energy has greatly diminished. And so please do something that will enable me to regain my normal healthy condition." Lord Brahma smilingly assured Agni, "Don't worry, for you will certainly regain your original luster. Once long ago you had eaten the Kandava forest at the request of the demigods, and since that time, however, the forest has again reflourished, and now it serves as the residence of numerous enemies of the demigods. If you can devour the Kandava forest, you'll become cured of your disease by eating the fat of all the living creatures residing there." After receiving this instruction, Agni went to the Kandava forest along with Vayu, the god of wind. They're a very heavy combination, wind and fire. Soon the whole area was ablaze. However, the inhabitants of the forest made an all-out effort to put out the fire, and for this purpose they brought hundreds and thousands of elephants who brought water in their trunks. And thus, along with the aid of other creatures who helped according to their capacity, the elephants soon extinguished the fire. Thereafter, Agni made 6 more attempts to devour the Kandava forest, but each time the fire was somehow put out. Finally, out of frustration, Agni returned to Brahma again and explained how he had failed to cure his illness. After reflecting a moment, Lord Brahma advised Agni to approach Lord Krishna and Arjuna, since at that time they were residing near the Kandava forest. Without delay, Agni approached Lord Krishna and Arjuna in the guise of a Brahmana, and after hearing Agni's request, Arjuna said, "Since I had promised to feed you to your full satisfaction, I am prepared to fight with even the leaders of the demigods, if need be. Agni, if you want me to fight to the fullest extent of my abilities, then you should know that I do not have a bow that matches my great strength. Beside this, so that I can fully utilize the deftness of my hands, I require a quiver that's inexhaustible with its arrows. I also need a better chariot and drawn by celestial heavenly horses. O God of fire, my present chariot is incapable of carrying the required load of weapons. I also think it very befitting that if Lord Krishna should be given a weapon that would match his unlimited strength. If you can give me adequate means for doing so, I will happily enable you to devour the Kandava forest." Agni then began to meditate on Varuna with a concentrated mind, and Varuna can understand that Agni was summoning him, so he came there at once. Agni and Varuna, they're getting along well at this time. After showing Varuna great respect, Agni said, "O Lord of the waters, please give me the Gandiva bow, 2 inexhaustible quivers, and the celestial chariot you had formerly received from Soma. In addition, I request you to give Lord Krishna the Sudarshan Chakra so that he can assist Arjuna in the great task that I have put before him." Varuna happily consented. First, he handed the Gandiva bow to Agni. "This bow is considered to be the chief of all weapons, and it is equal to 100,000 ordinary bows." Varuna next gave Agni 2 inexhaustible quivers and then called for a wonderful chariot that had been constructed by Vishwakarma. It was so dazzling that no one could even look at it. Arjuna respectfully circumambulated the celestial chariot. Then, with the Gandiva bow in his hand, he joyfully mounted it, considering himself now to be capable of engaging in battle against anyone within the 3 worlds. Agni then presented Sudarshan Chakra to Lord Krishna, along with the Kamodaki club, which roars like thunder when hurled. even though in reality these two weapons are his eternal paraphernalia, Lord Krishna was very pleased to accept them. And from that time on, Sudarshan became his favorite weapon. Arjuna indicated that Agni could begin, and so the fire god immediately assumed his all-consuming feature and began to encompass the entire Kandava forest with flames. When they saw that there was a great conflagration on all sides, the forest creatures panicked. As they tried to escape a fiery death, they were pierced with arrows shot by Krishna and Arjuna, who had placed themselves on opposite sides. Indeed, as the forest became more and more engulfed in flames, many thousands of panic-stricken creatures were seen running here and there. Some of them simply clasped their elderly parents or infant children. Being unwilling to leave without their helpless relatives, they died in the blazing forest fire. Innumerable creatures could be seen rolling on the ground in great agony as their limbs were being burnt by the fire. The ponds within the forest began to boil because of the intense heat, so that even the fish and the tortoises perished. The birds tried to fly away from the conflagration, but they were pierced by Arjuna's arrows, and thus they fell down back into the blazing fire. All these creatures were thus created a tumultuous uproar as they were either pierced by arrows or burnt alive within the fire. It's heavy, yes? The flames finally rose so high that even the demigods became alarmed. So they hastily approached King Indra to inform him of the situation. Indra then sent dark masses of clouds to extinguish the fire. However, when the clouds showered torrents of rain, the water evaporated before reaching the ground. Due to the intense heat, upon seeing this, Indra became enraged, and he sent even more powerful clouds. Thereafter, as lightning flashed above and smoke billowed below, because of rain contacting the fire, the combined effort created a ghastly scene. Arjuna then employed his celestial weapon to create an impenetrable umbrella of arrows above the entire forest. Thus the rain could not touch the fire, and from below, no living being could escape from the blazing inferno. Takshaka was at Kurukshetra while Agni was devouring the Kandava forest. Although his wife and son, Ashvasena, were within the blazing fire, when Ashvasena tried to escape, Arjuna drove him back with a shower of arrows. To try and save her son, Takshaka's wife swallowed him, beginning with his head. Then as the son's tail protruded from her mouth, she suddenly rose into the sky. Arjuna saw Ashvasena's mother, and so he quickly severed her head with his sharp arrows. Indra witnessed this. And to save Ashvasena, he suddenly jolted Arjuna with a violent wind, making him fall momentarily unconscious. And taking advantage of this, Ashvasena fled to safety. When Arjuna regained consciousness and realized what had happened, he became furious with Indra. He was really in Kshatriya Bhav. As a challenge to the king of heaven, who happened to be his father, Arjuna sent a shower of arrows into the sky. Indra also desired to fight, and in retaliation he released a weapon that created a torrent of rain, fierce wind, and furious lightning and thunder. Arjuna released a Vayavya weapon that dispelled all the clouds, so that when a few moments the sky became clear and a gentle cooling breeze began to blow. Agni, who was completely covered with the fat of burning living beings, was very pleased with Arjuna for enabling him to devour the Kandava forest without impediment. Next, numerous birds of the Garuda species appeared in the sky with a host of Nagas, and they attacked Krishna and Arjuna. However, Arjuna cut them all to pieces with his arrows, making them fall also into the forest fire. Next, numerous asuras, yakshas, rakshas, and nagas rushed at Krishna and Arjuna while showering their weapons. And Lord Krishna employed his Sudarshan Chakra to complement Arjuna's counterattack of arrows, and thus all these demons were soon deprived of their heads. Meanwhile, Indra picked up his thunderbolt and he came upon the scene. Riding upon Airavata and accompanied by all the other chief demigods, Yamaraj wielded his huge mace. Varuna carried his noose, Kuvera held a club, Skanda held a huge lance. The Ashwini Kumaras carried effulgent plants to be used as weapons. Surya held a fierce dart, and Mrityu came there with a dreadful battle axe. In addition, there were the Maruts, Rudras, Vasus, Vishwadevs, and Sadyas. All together, they rushed at Lord Krishna and Arjuna, who were calmly waiting with their bows in their hands. When the demigods came within range, Krishna and Arjuna released a shower of unlimited arrows and quickly drove their adversaries away from the battlefield. Indra then retaliated by discharging torrents of stones, but Arjuna easily smashed them into fragments with his arrows. This made the King of Heaven highly enraged. With a desire to kill Arjuna, he tore a peak from Mount Mandara and hurled it. Arjuna shattered the mountain peak with innumerable arrows. However, and as the rocks fell into the burning fire, innumerable living entities were also crushed. Because of the hail of falling stones, all of the Danavas, Rakshasas, Nagas, and the forest animals began running here and there in the hopes of saving themselves. However, when they found that the fire was blazing on all sides and that Krishna and Arjuna were ready to kill them if they attempted to escape, they simply stood motionless and cried aloud as if they had no more reason left. Lord Krishna then released his Sudarshan Chakra. And as all the Danavas, Rakshasas, and Nagas and animals were being cut to pieces, they fell also into Agni's blazing mouths. Indeed, as Lord Krishna repeatedly dispatched his chakra, his face assumed such a ferocious feature that even the demigods became too afraid to approach him. So this is like when Arjuna saw the universal form, he said, "Please, let me see your two-armed form again. I want to see this form of yours." It was too much for him. When Indra saw how the demigods were fearfully fleeing from the scene of battle, he became astonished at Krishna Arjuna's power. Then a voice from the sky declared, "Indra, you need not worry about your friend Takshaka, for he is now living in Kurukshetra. You should know that Krishna Arjuna cannot be defeated, because they are directly Nara Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the worshipable Lord of the universe. O King of Heaven, give up your attempts to protect the Kandava forest, for its destruction has been ordained by Krishna, by destiny." Destiny means Daiva, means Krishna. Indra considered this voice to be of a superior authority, and so he gave up his enmity and returned to heaven along with the other demigods. When they saw their assailants retreat, Lord Krishna and Arjuna began to roar with delight like lions. Thereafter, they continued to kill all the residents of the Kandava forest without impediment. Thus, all of the creatures were burned in the fire, so that its flames rose higher and higher. And by eating such a large quantity of flesh, blood, and fat, Agni became highly gratified. Lord Krishna then saw Maya Danava trying to escape, while Agni pursued him on a chariot driven by Vayu. When Lord Krishna prepared to release his Sudarshan Chakra, Maya Danava gave up all hopes of saving his life, and therefore he took shelter of Krishna's devotee, Arjuna. As the demon fearfully pleaded for mercy from Arjuna, Arjuna gave him assurance of safety. And when Lord Krishna heard this, he restrained himself, as did Agni. Agni continued to burn the Kandava forest for 15 days, and except for 6 living beings, all were consumed in the all-devouring fire. These 6 survivors were Asvasena, Maya Dhanava, and 4 birds called Sharnagas. It continues, but we stop. Huh? Yes, you want to know about the 4 birds? You can read about it. It's the next pastime that's told. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. All-powerful Lord Krishna and Arjuna ki jai. The merciful protection of Krishna's devotees ki jai, which is our hope. Nitai Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Sri Vrindavan Dham Bhaktivinoda ki jai.